Welcome to the Dauntless Grace Exchange. I'm Megan.
And I'm Deidre. And we're excited to be back, just the two of us. It's been a bit. We've had a great series. If you missed any of the former series on trauma, we had some amazing guests last week. Caitlin Chess kind of bridging the conversation into how we move into the political climate of our nation. And so, yeah, and you and I just got back from our fall Dauntless Grace retreat. Amazing.
So good. Like beyond my expectations. I think I told you on the way home that I had carried the weight of the expectations of this retreat, maybe more than any that we've done before, except maybe our giant one in Colorado. And it felt just like a breath of like release. Like I keep saying, like God showed up like he always does. He has never once left us alone to figure out these retreats for ourselves and fend for ourselves. But also it was just such a good group of women that had gathered, and they were so just easy to be with, and we had fun and we rested and we talked. And yeah, it reignites my like passion for what we do and what we get to talk about and who we get to minister to every single time we gather and do one of these retreats. So I've already booked and I'm planning the next one for President's Day week in 2024. If you're interested.
I agree. There were several people coming to this retreat that I thought, how can we teach them anything new? Like they already know everything we know about the Enneagram or their counselors or whatever. Like they've been doing this work. I was very not nervous in the sense that like, we're still going to do what we do, but will they find value in it? You know, was it worth their time to come? And the Lord just still, he shows up and he does his thing. And that's all that mattered was that they met with him. Plus, you're right. It was just fun. We just had lots of easy conversation. And my favorite things are sitting around with a whole group of us at the same table to eat and talk and laugh and to know people that you've only known 10 or 15 minutes and get up from that meal feeling so close already. And like the laughter and camaraderie is so easy, is just such a cool space to be in. Cause that's just not the case everywhere I go. You know, there's a lot of things where I know people really well and I'll still go to social functions and just kind of feel leaving like I didn't have one like deep conversation or one deep connection there. Like it was fine, but it was just like, whatever. I came, I saw, I checked it off and I'm going home, you know. I just can't believe that some of these people are strangers. And after one meal, it's like, oh, I just love your heart.
It's so true. Like, and you're funny. Shout out to Steph. I like how on all of these retreats, we show up on Friday night and it's always just a little bit awkward. Like, hello, stranger I've only ever talked to via email or on Facebook. Welcome to the place where we're all going to sleep in the same vicinity for two nights and get really intimate in our conversations. And by Sunday, everyone's like, so how do we connect? How can we exchange numbers? They're hugging everybody goodbye. And we even saw this when we had like 40 plus women in Colorado that came from all over the country. And on the first night, everyone was kind of at their own little tables with the one or two people they knew. And by Sunday, I think we were all sitting at like three big tables, everyone together, and just new friendships form. It's so fun. It's so amazing. It's like youth camp, but with like showers and less like outdoorsy hiking.
And fewer pranks for the most part.
Just as bad as much sleep though, I will say that.
Oh, whatever. We had plenty of sleep the first night. Okay. Topic. Do you want to share why we're talking about this specific one? What brought this up? What's happening in your personal life?
So a few weeks ago, when we were talking to Tracy Bussey, right? I had made mention that I had looked it through a doctoral program, and then I read someone's doctoral thesis, and I was like, oh, yeah, no, I'm not going to write a 300-page book on anything. And then somewhere along the line, out of nowhere, I decided to apply for an actual doctoral program and was accepted. So I'll be starting my doctorate in education leadership in January. And part of that is that I get to do a certificate in social emotional learning. So I have been like knees deep in social emotional learning coursework already in preparation for that. And the way that it pairs with everything that we do, I mean, what we do is social emotional learning, but this is specific to like, how can we impart it to kids in the classroom? And then just shout out to my teenager who just got invited to apply for National Honor Society. She had to write a leadership essay about why she should be in the NHS and had to list her accomplishments. But she's a sophomore who grew up during COVID and has no accomplishments. So I was like, well, why don't you talk about how you've changed since the pandemic, like how that changed you? And so she ended up writing her whole essay on social emotional learning and how she's growing as a character and as a person, because it's so vital for leaders.
Oh, that's really good. So we thought we're going to do a little series here because we feel like we have some tools through the Enneagram for both our own as adults growth in social emotional learning, as well as how we can use this, whether you're a teacher, a youth leader, a parent, a Sunday school teacher. So many of us work with children in one way or another in our lives. And so,
or just other humans.
Just other humans, because the truth is we all have like our inner child in us that is reacting to things all the time. And so often we look at another adult who might be responding in a way we don't understand, and we can respond in a, what is wrong with you? What is wrong with you? Or we can get curious and move toward that person and employ some of these social emotional skills. So, we thought to start the series off, we would go through each of the 9 Enneagram types and talk a little bit about what might have stunted their growth in their social emotional learning, or just been a reason why they wouldn't have even jumped in to begin with wanting to learn about it. So I'll let you start us off. Should we start with ones, or do we just like go from the middle and work outward or something?
Oh, I feel like that would trip me up. I understand why you're doing it, but there's a reason why my Instagram account only can go 1 through 9.
Yeah. Well, ones are easy, I think, because we want to know what the right thing is to do. And so as children, if someone tells us what is right, for the most part, we're going to toe the line to do whatever it takes to get that gold star. And that can look like ignoring our own emotions, maybe even ignoring other people's emotions if it stands in the way of doing the right thing. Now, for me, I'm a little bit more of a social one, kind of had a heavy 9 wing growing up where I wanted to keep the peace. So if someone was upset around me, I definitely was curious about why and to see if I could help make it right. But if talking to them meant I was going to get in trouble from the teacher, then I wouldn't do that. I would pay attention to the teacher.
Well, and you would be hesitant to look at any of the emotions inside of yourself that felt wrong or bad. Like if you were really upset about something that that someone was like, I'll give you something to cry about. Well, you're not going to examine that real closely. You're just going to stuff it away. Or anger. You weren't allowed to feel angry according to that own inner critic, because that is something that's not a good emotion to feel. And I'm using good in air quotes.
Yeah.
So I would just say like, yeah, you would be hesitant then. And even some of the good emotions, I'm thinking that a one would be just really scared of anything that felt nuanced, because they're such black and white thinkers. Because if you know what's right, you know how to move forward. And when you're presented with too many options or too much nuance, then you get stuck. So anything that made you really kind of hold more than one emotion at a time probably felt pretty scary.
Yeah, as I think a lack of curiosity would have definitely stunted growth for me. I just, for me personally, kind of grew up in a space where there was a lot of inner healing just because of the kind of church I was in and things like that. So I don't know that stunted my growth in some of those spaces. But also that one energy of moving toward or the dutiful stance can look like maybe more emotionally mature than I was.
Oh yeah. Cause one of the facets of like emotional intelligence is responsible decision-making. Mm-hmm. That's a very, very one thing to grasp like early. That doesn't mean that they're super emotionally intelligent about their own or even others' emotions, just because they can make responsible decisions with the facts presented to them. I think ones can fake their way into looking really emotional intelligent, even if they're not.
Can you give us a few of those other tenets or
Yeah,
pillars?
they kind of fall into three main categories. It's awareness of self, awareness of others, and then like responsibility, basically. So the awareness of self can break down into like awareness of self and also growth for self, I want to say. You're putting
In
me on
that
the
regard,
spot
I
here.
think as a one, we kind of have an advantage there because we're hyper aware of ourselves and others and the spaces we're in. But that doesn't always mean it's actually maturing at the right speed. It's like awareness to fix something isn't necessarily emotional intelligence there.
Okay, so self-awareness, like I said, and so then self-management, which would be the growth step of it, right? Like regulating one's own emotions, social awareness, and then relationship skills. So it's like being aware of others and also how do you regulate relationship then, and then the responsible decision making. So it's kind of those three buckets.
Yeah, let's talk about twos then with that.
I think twos have really big social awareness, right? And probably they learn relational management really fast early on too, because that's their main goal in life is to keep and maintain those relationships. But we all know twos that have a really hard time identifying their own emotions because of that and their own needs. And then even regulating their own emotions is hard because they're so busy regulating other people's emotions. And I think that when they don't know your own emotions and needs, that can really hinder responsible decision making when it's about yourself too. Because how can you tell what's good for you if you don't even know how you're feeling and what you need.
Why Suzanne Stabile says it's good practice for twos to wake up and ask themselves, what is mine to do? Because taking responsibility for myself is very different than taking responsibility for all the needs of the people around me, which very likely are not what would fall in my responsibility if I were honest about it. And I think that just getting dysregulated emotionally would come easily, like you said, because they're picking up on other people's feelings. And so you could have a room full of students in a class, and they could be all over the map where they all are feeling. And the two is just sitting there picking up on all of it and carrying a lot of it, maybe not everyone's, but a lot. And so that could very easily get them into a dysregulated space themselves.
Well, and I'm just thinking, even an emotionally immature two in a one-on-one relationship with someone, if that someone becomes dysregulated, they need a grounding force, but the two is just going to mirror their emotions if they don't have that awareness of own self and how to manage and regulate their own emotions. So they can't be that grounding force and that regulator for the other person when they get caught up in the dysregulation of it. So whether they're working with kids or not, I think that is a big, big thing to watch out for.
Yeah. All right. Threes, a little bit of the same problem because they're going to pick up on feelings of others. But their awareness is based around a different focus of attention. And so, where I think that they can have an impediment is because their focus of attention is on tasks and goals, and they're not as feeling, and while they're feeling dominant, just like twos, because of that feeling repression, they can really just run right over somebody else in the pursuit of their own thing that they want to accomplish. And so it takes a little bit more work with them in a different kind of way than it would with a two to sit with the discomfort of seeing how their actions have impacted the other ones around them. And that's hard. It's hard as a parent of a three to teach them how to have that awareness.
I'm going to keep bringing this back to adults because I just think that we see this, these behaviors don't just like all of a sudden become better when we hit some magic age at 18 or 30 if we haven't been learning this our whole life. But just as a fun example, one of our favorite threes ever is dealing with some stuff in her life, and we're like, "Are you seeing your counselor?" And she was like, "Well, I don't want to right now because I don't want to think about it. I don't want to feel it." Well, when are you going to do that? And she's like, "Eh, maybe after the new year when I have time, when I can really look at them." And it's like that's so indicative of a three, and I get it. Like she shouldn't until she's ready to deal with it. Like I'm no judgment, but a three is going to go when I have time to feel it. Well, except threes don't ever really have time to feel it. So
Yeah.
they really, really, really have to be self-aware enough to know that they have to take the time to feel it. So
Whereas they're going to be better than a two would be on the personal responsibility, because they know what their goal is and they're going to own it, and they don't need a lot of assistance in getting it accomplished, and they're very focused on that, right? So almost the exact opposite of the twos and threes are from one another in the emotional regulation and dealing with the, you know, others versus the responsibilities.
Fours. Well, we know that fours can get very, very self-aware, very young, and even maybe kind of socially aware. But I think the management of both own emotions and even relationships are going to be difficult for the four, therefore making responsible decision-making difficult for a four. Because they know emotions, they know all the emotions, they can even sense your emotions too, if they can lift their head up enough. But what do you do with them when they're all that big all the time? And so regulating emotions for a four is just the biggest key, especially I'm thinking of like myself when I was a kid. Young fours have got to be taught how to regulate, not stuff or wallow
or ignore
whatever, or ignore whatever that is. They have to know how to regulate it.
Like you thinking about how parents or teachers would interact with a four, they could either really get it more worked up because they're maybe trying to be empathetic or something, but in a way that doesn't bring regulation, like, you know, or more than likely they're like, what's your problem? Get over it, you know, and then not allowing space to learn how to deal with the big emotions because, well, something's wrong with me that I even have them, it, you know, is the story that the kid's left telling themselves. And then if something's wrong with you, it's hard to take responsibility then, because it's like, well, how do you expect me to do it if something's just wrong with me to begin with? And so I think giving them some agency over how to manage their emotions will ultimately help with that sense of responsibility and in the way that they can respond to others too and see what others need.
Our favorite occupational therapist, Kelsey Olds, who was on the podcast a few weeks ago, I saw her post yesterday or today on Facebook that was talking about how as parents or caregivers or teachers, we want to fix the whatever the complaint or the disappointment or the upset thing is that the kid brings to us. She's like, but all they need is to be seen and heard. So when they're saying, my best friend pushed me down today, instead of being like, oh, well, what did you do? You know, how did you respond? Did you tell the teacher? And all of a sudden, you know, it's really the most important thing to say, oh, I bet that was sad for you because you guys were really close. I bet that hurt. And just kind of acknowledging the feeling of that, I think is what makes the big feelings not feel so scary, overwhelming, and helps the four or any kid just regulate that. And it doesn't feel like, oh no, if they have to fix my feelings, then I'm not supposed to feel this way. But what happens when I keep feeling this way? I can't be sad. I'm supposed to be happy, but I keep getting sad. I keep getting sad. I keep getting sad. Something must be wrong with me.
Yeah, that's a big key, I think, what you just said. If for any number, and we'll talk about some of the other ones too, if we have to move in to fix it, then we're either telling them they're not capable of fixing it, or it's a scary thing that needs to be fixed or whatever. So that makes a lot of sense with how big the emotion can already feel to a four. And then to have a parental figure kind of respond in a way that sends a signal that you're right, that is a big feeling. That is scary, or that's so scary, don't let it out, you know, keep it inside or ignore it. That's sending the same message in so many words.
Yeah. It's so scary to feel that sad. Let's make you feel happy right now. Let me cheer you up. Let me fix it. Let me reroute that emotion into something good somehow.
Yeah. And then we have our Enneagram fives, which are going to be a very different situation because they're going to be thinking and processing, and maybe with that withdrawing first inclination instead of jumping into something might make them slow at understand being slow to engage with others is, I think, going to slow them down in learning how to read cues from others. But also they're not very in touch with their own feelings. I was telling you today, I read something about fives that I should know. And I mean, I do know it, but I hadn't quite thought of it in this way, that I know that fives really need privacy. And I don't think that's different for children. They don't have a lot to keep private in terms of like the big weighty stuff of life, but whatever their inner world is, it's theirs, and they will gather the resources to, you know, to hoard that privacy. So I guess I just assume that they don't share something hard that's like a need with others because they don't want to be a burden, which I think is true. But Suzanne Stabile was saying it's also because if they share something hard with you, now they have to deal with your emotional reaction to it. And they don't have time for that. So that awareness of others is a self, like, I think that takes a while to grow in because they're so dealing with their internal world in a different way than fours, not internal world, but, you know, with the managing the fear mm-hmm. that they have themselves.
Yeah, I think they're, you know, going to be really good at making decisions. We already know that they're really neutral and good at doing that. But I would say fives, the ones I know, are generally good self-regulators, but I think it's because they aren't very self-aware. So they regulate the emotions that come to the surface, which are very few. So if they actually got more aware and got more in touch and let those emotions rise up, then they'd have more to have to self-regulate there too.
I love when we had the episode with Sky Harmon on, and she was our Enneagram 5 in the Constellation of Parts series. She talked about a part of herself that was the emotional regulator, and it was basically a dam that was holding all the water back, and all the water was all those emotions, right? And so their regulator is just like, it's all staying locked up, period.
Yeah.
So that could definitely stunt their growth in learning how to be more introspective about what they're feeling, and for sure stunt their growth in how others are feeling, because they don't want to be made to feel responsible for your feelings in any way or get dragged into that emotional mess. But the sense of responsibility, I think, would be pretty strong with them, because they're going to be dutiful to what they have said yes to or what's required of them in more of those thinking and task spaces, I would guess. So I'm thinking that would be their strength.
Yeah. Enneagram sixes, we know that they are naturally wanting to be relational, but, you know, kind of distrust people. So I think that in some of that, their relationship skills become fear-based, like kind of everything in their life is a little bit fear-based. So can I trust you? Can I not trust you? Can I trust you? Can I not trust you? Are you going to let me down like you did before? If you did before, I'm probably never going to trust you again anyway. So I would say that's a little bit more difficult for them to really go beyond that fear and trust stuff that they're already dealing with. Don't you think?
Yeah. I'm kind of wondering if, depending on where they are on that spectrum of counter versus, wow, the word just went out of my head.
Phobic?
Yes. Phobic versus counterphobic on that spectrum. Because sometimes you'll talk when you're teaching about sixes being on that spectrum, that maybe socially they're more counterphobic. And so they'll go engage more proactively socially, and they're more phobic in things that are like natural, you know, health things, or like some like actual harm that could be coming, or vice versa. So if they were more phobic in the social, they might be afraid to step out and practice those things. And they're more counterphobic in maybe some of the like disaster preparedness. So I find that curious to kind of figure out how to, what their strength or not strength would be. Either way though, if they're reading the room socially, but their focus of attention is still on what could go wrong, then even that social interaction is still going to be through that lens. Right. And so they could be a very social one. They're going out to figure out, but like you said, the eye is more on like, who can I trust? What team am I going to be part of that feels safe to be in the midst of? But what do you think about like their sense of responsibility? That would be pretty high, I would feel like, for them.
I definitely think so. But, you know, if everything they're doing is kind of managing their own fears, if that's kind of what's driving them, what could go wrong, then I would say that even their own like self-regulation, their decision-making, all of that could get thrown into a little bit of a topsy-turvy if their brain is like screaming fear signals at them, right? More than say other people who are not maybe on the lookout for potential danger around every corner. So I would say they probably really responsible. I would say decision-making in general though might be difficult just because they're not really thinking about the pros and cons in the same way that people without that little inner committee is screaming about the danger the way those people are in their head, you know? So it kind of clouds up. That's like their thinking repression. It clouds up their thinking ability to productively make those decisions.
And I wonder, because they, unlike fives who really need to, their independence, sixes are looking to find where dependence is safe. And so I wonder if that could turn into blame shifting instead of taking a sense of personal responsibility. If they're looking to others and then that isn't good guidance, it's really easy to be like, well, you're the one that led me astray. I trusted you, you know. I've kind of heard that from 1-6, that she would ask for advice, even though she didn't want to do it that way, just so that when she did it that way and it didn't go right, she could be like, well, you told me to do it that way. So she's aware of that now, but growing up, she didn't necessarily know that that's why she was doing it.
That's fascinating. I never thought about it that way.
All right, sevens.
Oh, well, sevens, just, they're the ultimate ones who don't want to deal with the messy emotions. So they actually think it's a problem to sit there and have a lot of sadness and pain and grief. And so they're going to reframe it for themselves, as much as we were like, oh, parents don't reframe it for their kids. Well, sevens are going to naturally reframe it for themselves without anyone's input or help anyway. So they just will never have time to be super like self-aware. I guess they're really good emotional regulators in that sense, because they're always coming back to happy. But is it true regulation if you're not actually ever letting yourself feel those other feelings?
Right. So they could be good at helping regulate others, if, as long as whatever the other person's going through doesn't take too long or isn't too painful, maybe.
Right. As long as what the other person needs is, can I interest you in a sarcastic comment a la Chandler Bing, as opposed to let me sit with you in your pain and suffering.
Right. The personal responsibility for them, in some ways I can see them kind of, they're like the, you know, just go get it done people. Like, this is just gonna be fun. I don't have time for your excuses. Let's just knock it out. Let's get it done so we can go have fun, whatever. But at the same time, they could excuse a lot of things because of their pursuit of fun and not actually end up doing the thing that they were made to be responsible for.
Well, and so if one of their gifts is like flexibility, adaptability, and spontaneity, that's great until it becomes impetuousness and they're moving forward without actually being responsible in the decision.
Yeah. Yeah.
Eights just don't have time for that.
I think eights are going to be really high on that responsibility thing though. Like, they're going to know
definitely
what is theirs to do and what is what other and even others is to do. And they will do whatever it takes to make sure everybody's moving in the direction of getting those things done.
But they don't want to mess with the touchy-feely emotional stuff, and they don't have time for that, whether it's within their own selves or in relationships. Like, nobody needs to worry about the touchy-feely. Let's just get done what we need to do. Look, we're working together towards a common goal, even if that's in a marriage relationship or in a classroom or whatever that is. Like, we don't need to get down into our heart stuff. We're just working together for a common goal. We're working side by side.
Well, and the funny thing is, when I think about like how teachers might, you know, deal with people, the ones who are getting their work done or getting the things accomplished or standing in line, you know, like there's a couple of these numbers that are going to fall kind of really naturally into what would work well, like in a school environment, maybe, for example. So someone isn't pulling them aside because they're already checking the boxes of what the school gets graded on. But unless we're teaching social emotional as part of it, like these eights and even the threes, maybe the ones, I don't know, they're going to get kind of left out of learning how to grow in that. Like, other types are learning to grow in their doing, right? If they're doing repressed or
their lesson planning, their classroom management skills, their.
But the kids who need the social emotional stuff, we're not necessarily giving them to school unless the eight like did something to upset another kid and the teacher's like, you need to say you're sorry. And they're like, okay, if I say I'm sorry, like, are we done with it? It's like, that's not quite the same as like, why did you do it? And how did that make you feel that you did that?
I'm kind of cracking up right now because as a former teacher who is a four and knew nothing about the Enneagram or like social emotional learning was not even an education buzzword the last time I was in a classroom. And I started my teaching career in 2005. Something like that. And from year one on, I don't think I ever had a year where I didn't have every student in my every class sit around in a circle and we would pass around papers and I'd have them write compliments about whoever's paper came in front of them and they'd fold it up and pass it on. And like, I had no idea that I was an Enneagram. I mean, it makes total sense that I'm a four, but I didn't know what that meant. I just knew that kids tend to work together better and respect the teacher better when they feel seen in some way and when they feel like there's an acceptance of them. And so I tried to cultivate that at every turn. But I wasn't very good at classroom management, disciplining, getting my lesson plans done in time, or sticking to the lesson plan I had written. So definitely some stuff I needed to bring up there. But I think that goes along with what you're talking about. The eight would have had all of that done great, but they're not ever going to sit around in a feeling circle with their class,
Right.
with their students.
Right. We all bring our strengths. It's fine.
Although I will say I had kids who are now like 30 reach out to me on Facebook and send me pictures of that paper. Like they still have it from when they were in seventh grade in like
Oh.
06. Not even kidding. Like a boy, like one of the toughest kids I had when he was a seventh grader. He was in his probably mid-20s and he messaged me on Facebook and said, "Oh, I saw this paper, Mrs. Hall. That was the best thing."
Oh.
So
Oh,
it's
well,
my own plug for social emotional learning there.
here, it's what sets us apart though from animals. Like we can teach, we have robots, we have AI who can learn facts, and we have like animals who can learn how to sit still, stay in line, put their paw up when you tell them to. Like if we are not social emotional creatures, what are we? Why is this not such a, it's because we were trained in an era where everyone were laborers and we just needed them to fall in line to get the laboring done. But that's not where we are now. And I think it's so cool that education, while it may be, a half a century behind, it's like getting there.
Yeah,
Getting there.
finally.
Okay, finally we have our nines.
Oh, nines? Like I want to talk about this because my oldest is a nine and she's been dealing with some really heavy emotions lately. And so, and she wants to come on our podcast and talk about it someday. So maybe the listeners can hear from a 15-year-old in the middle of this. But we've been talking about how do you, it's okay to feel those heavy feelings. It's even though it's gonna like disrupt that inner peace that you're trying so hard to protect, right? So if we talk about nines having that boundary internally and externally because they want to keep everything at still inside and they want to keep everything at peace outside. And really heavy emotions like heartbreak, they come in to really cause a lot of turmoil internally. And so what we've been talking about is it's okay to like cycle, like let those emotions cycle through you. It's not going to take you under. It's not going to cause conflict to feel them, whether it's in or out. So I think just that fear of any kind of turmoil is what's going to keep a nine from really gazing too hard inside.
And unfortunately, the responsibility thing, same reason why they're doing repress. Sometimes it's like they kind of know what to do, but like, does anybody care if I do it? Does it matter if I do it? Or if doing it will cause any kind of internal peace being lost, internally. So I think because they're these gut body types and because they can see that things are important. They may not always get the responsibility might get a little derailed because they don't know how to prioritize like what's the most important on the list. But I think that they can learn that. It's just that they really have to be careful that they're not disassociating because of fear of conflict or fear of what it will cost them. So I'm not exactly sure how to teach that well, but we know a lot of nines. Your daughter, ninth grade, she was like, okay, now's the time. I'm the A student. I'm knocking it out, So
Somewhere motivation kicked in, yeah.
that internal locus of like, this is what I want, and then things won't be able to derail them. But sevens and nines are both kind of hard to make do something. You really need to get them to, you need to inspire them so they want it, and it'll be a lot easier than to try to motivate
Yeah.
them.
So what have we learned?
What have we learned? I think that
We've
we
learned that.
all, of those three things you're saying are part of social emotional learning, we all have something that's probably a strength kind of hardwired into us and probably a weakness. Might be if we really wanted to go back and look at how they're connected to our triads and stances, very possibly connected to some of that. Sounds like it, because where we are thinking repressed or doing repressed or feeling repressed, it's going to connect to one of those areas. And unless we help our kids, our students, or ourselves do some work to pull up those repressed centers, we could have a stunted area of social emotional growth.
And maybe some resistance to learning about it based on one of those two. And so the IFS lesson internal family systems therapy model to impart to you at this moment in time would be, what came up for you? What part of you spoke the loudest and was like, hey, that's not me. That doesn't sound right. And got indignant or maybe mad or laughed along or was irritated or whatever. And listen to that part because it's telling you something about yourself. And that might be the key to looking a little bit further in to see what is holding you back from really moving into the next level of healing.
And that wraps up another episode of the Dauntless Grace Exchange. Be sure to subscribe on your favorite podcast app and leave a review so other people can find us.
You can follow us on social media to stay connected. We're on Instagram at Dauntless Grace Ministries, and our Facebook page is Dauntless Grace.
For more about the Enneagram, visit our website at dauntlessgrace.org for coaching and training opportunities. And you can follow me at Enneagram Megan on Instagram.
And be sure to check out our website for more information about today's podcast. Plus, you can click the resources tab to find books by all the authors we've spoken to or about. And you can find it at dauntlessgrace.org.